We're going to talk about the Labour Party's new budget that they've announced this week. I speak to you today as somebody who considers themselves to be left-wing, not in a particularly radical or pretentious way, I hope, but I am somebody who believes in the post-war settlement in Britain that gave us the National Health Service and the cheap food policy, and those things were given to us by the Labour Party. Ironically, this week we were going to be talking about the Scott Report, which, as we'll now see next week, was the blueprint for the post-war countryside that demanded protections for small owner-occupying farmers and, more importantly, on the consumer end, protections for people who eat food. The Labour Party's recent budget has tried to raise tax. I would like to make it very clear that I am not adverse to tax. I'm not even adverse to inheritance tax in the conventional sense. It takes money as it moves between generations, but there is a problem with what the Labour Party is doing to something called agricultural property relief. Until now, agricultural property relief has been a way that agricultural property could be passed between generations of a family without inheritance tax. This applies to land or pasture that is used to grow crops or rear animals. So as a farm passes between generations, no inheritance tax is paid. Our farm was bought by my grandfather, who paid for it by farming it, and he was able to pass it to my father without any inheritance tax. So the operation of the farm was unaffected by the change in ownership, and we're still here today. The Labour Party's reforms have just introduced a cap on the relief given. So up to £1 million, a farm won't be subject to inheritance tax, but any value above £1 million will be hit by inheritance tax at a reduced rate, half of the standard rate, which is 40%, so a farm will pay 20% tax on its value over £1 million as it moves between generations every few decades. £1 million sounds like an awful lot of money, and it is an awful lot of money, but that's the problem here. The tax must be paid in money, but the tax isn't on money. The tax is on land, and land is not money. We'll use our farm as an example. Like most farms, we have a yard and buildings and two houses. One is a family home, and the other is a little cottage for the older generation. But that, the yard, the buildings, the houses, the land thereon, is worth about £1 million. We have a very small farm. Until recently, it was dairy, which should have been economically viable as a unit, but now we have given up. So it's 120 acres of arable, essentially, a part-time job for one person. The land is 10 fields, averaging about 12 acres each. I am, of course, very aware that we are incredibly fortunate to be in the position that we are in, but as I was growing up, we were desperately poor. Dairy farming is not lucrative. This Farmers Weekly article from last week says dairy farms are set to return to profit, with the amusing implication that before that they had all been making no money at all. Everybody knows Jeremy Clarkson made £144 for a year's work. There's not much money in this way of life. Today, without the cows, our farm generates about £7,000 a year. There is money stored in the land, but we can't access that money by working the land. When the farm changed hands from my grandfather to my father, no actual money was moved. What my father wanted was the dairy business and to make a go at it. Point being, the yard itself is worth about £1 million. So by the time the land, the actual farm, is added to the inheritance package, the value already exceeds the £1 million limit for agricultural property relief set by the government. The land is probably worth about another million. Again, very rough maths and a low estimate, I would say. But if we presume the whole farm is worth £2 million between generations, between my father and me, we would have to pay a tax of 20% on £1 million, the value of the farm over the threshold of £1 million. So under this new reform, as the farm moves from my father to me, we would be hit by a tax bill of £200,000. As you may gather, the farm doesn't have £200,000. We generate about £7,000 a year. The tax is in money, but we don't have money. The farm doesn't generate that sort of money. The government allows the tax to be paid in equal annual instalments over 10 years. So if the farm was put over entirely to paying its own tax bill and we took no money out of it for our own ends at all, all things being equal, you would expect about £70,000 to be raised after 10 years of making £7,000 a year, which isn't even half of what would be required. We cannot afford to pay this tax. So this tax would force us to sell land. We would have to sell some fields to raise proceeds following the disposal of other assets within an estate. Probably two or three of the 10 fields would have to be sold to raise the money required. And then the farm will be smaller, and year on year it will generate even less money. Part of the problem here is the overinflated price of land. Land is far more expensive than its agricultural value because rich people want it as an investment. Companies want it for solar panels, other companies want it for carbon offsets, conservation charities want it to do environmental stuff, developers want it to build houses. The money power of the city drives up the land prices. That's why our farm is valuable. It's not because we have any hope of making money from it. We will never see that money. Farming is a way to live poor and die rich. Let's have a look at some properties on the market today and see how they would be affected if your family owned them. Hill Farm in Suffolk is for sale at 241 acres with a guide price of £2.5 million. A farm much smaller than this would struggle to be viable as a source of full-time employment for one person if it was just a typical arable or mixed farm producing the commodities that we all need to live off. So this is the lower end of what I would consider to be a viable, typical farm. It's not that big, but between generations, you'd be paying a tax of 20% on 1.5 million, the value over the 1 million threshold for relief. It would cost you £300,000 to pass this business to your children, every 25 or 30 years as the generations change. This 66-acre grassland farm would qualify entirely for the relief, but it's not economically viable as a farm. This is the sort of place you'd keep some sheep and make a bit of hay, have a beautiful life in lovely surroundings, but it wouldn't fill your time. You'd need other work as well. This is essentially a small holding, but this is the sort of farm that would not be hit by this new tax, as it's valued under £1 million. On the other end of the spectrum, you have the Sutton Bridge Estate, 5,000 acres valued at £55 million. This is very rich people territory, but to pass that between generations, it would cost £10,800,000, a lot of money. One potential positive of this policy is that if loads of land comes up for sale at the same time, it might drop the value down to its agricultural value, which would be a good thing. It would allow new entrants to buy into agriculture and pay for their farms by farming them. And these lower land prices would also devalue farms and would put more of them beneath the threshold for agricultural property relief. But I think this is very unlikely to happen because farmland isn't valuable because lots of people really want to be farmers. There is still relief up to £1 million that anyone could claim. Someone with £2 million in the bank who wanted to avoid the 40% inheritance tax could just buy £1 million worth of land and claim agricultural property relief. They could pass £1 million in assets to their children with no tax. This is a tax loophole that still exists after these reforms. I think society would be fairer if this loophole was closed. And crucially, taxing people who own land but don't work it would generate tax revenue, which is what the Labour Party was aiming to do with these reforms. Long-time viewers of this channel will know that we've talked about inheritance tax before. The famous People's Budget, enacted by David Lloyd George, that gave us the first welfare state, was funded by death duties on the aristocratic landlord class. And because land was worth more than the money that you could earn from it, these death duties meant they had to sell off part of their estates every generation. The effects of Lloyd George's death duties were absolutely huge. In response, the aristocracy devised their own brand of fascism and tried to overthrow the government. It gives us the organic movement and the character of Lord Lymington, who arguably founded environmentalism as we would recognise today, all out of bitterness at the taxes that had been levied on their estates. We still live in the shadow of the fallout from Lloyd George's decision to tax the aristocracy, but the reason his death duties were so controversial was because they were a policy of eradication. It made being an aristocrat unsustainable. Every generation they'd have to sell off part of their estates until a few decades down the line there would be nothing left. This was very easy to justify. Like most people, Lloyd George didn't really like aristocrats, but death duties on aristocratic estates are very different from putting death duties on farmers. Aristocrats live in big houses and exist entirely off rent paid by farmers. As aristocratic estates were eroded, farmers, normal people like my family, were able to buy land. Ripping money out of the aristocratic class means You no longer have landlords, and you have tax revenue. This is fine. But these new death duties on farmers means that my demographic are going to be squeezed out of existence in the same way. But we don't parasitically live off rents. We produce stuff. We are working people, and you need us because we produce food. No farmers, no food. We are not a parasitic landlord class. We work, and if you destroy us, you are destroying the food system. This is the problem with the Labour Party's reform. The threshold is far too low. Our farm will be hit really badly, and it's almost unusually small. I think it would be much better to invoke the spirit of David Lloyd George and raise the new threshold to just above whatever was considered to be the maximum reasonable size for a farm. I would suggest 1,000 acres is a reasonable size for a farm. Nobody needs more than 1,000 acres to make a good living. So above the value of 1,000 acres, you could implement new death duties, but at a much higher rate than 20%. Rip the money out of the wealthy. The Crown Estate, the King, for example, has 287,000 acres. You could rip a lot of money out of that if you tax it at 50% over a certain value when the King pops his clogs. However, I feel that the government has not had a proper look at this, because if you tax the rich landowners who don't work, that would mean land changes hands, and that can have unforeseen consequences. It would be lovely if King Charles's estate could be hit by death duties and divided up neatly into farms varying between 250 and 500 acres in size, farms that could be bought by ordinary people who wanted to be farmers and live on the land. But life is not that easy. The Tenant Farmers Association, representing farmers who don't own their own land and instead pay rent to landlords, is very concerned about the impacts of this change. They say the tax changes to be introduced from April 2026 could lead to a significant amount of land disposals from private estates, as we saw when death duty rates caused the breakup of rural estates in the middle of the 20th century, referring to Lloyd George's measures. Such disposals would be immensely damaging to the let sector of agriculture. The Tenant Farmers Association proposed to allow 100% inheritance tax relief to all land let for periods of 10 plus years. This would have driven more sustainable farm tenancies, created a secure rural economy, and protected traditional let estates, whilst hitting those landlords who continue to take a short-term approach to the management of their land. The 1 million tax-free exemption may help small owner-occupiers, but it will not help small tenant farmers on large estates, particularly those occupying under insecure farm business tenancies. We could see the loss of many small family farms. You could argue that the erosion of aristocratic estates would be a good thing, and I would agree with you, but it would only be a good thing if tenants were able to buy the land. But tenants won't be able to buy their own land because land prices are absurdly high. They'll be forced out. And he says it benefits small owner-occupiers, but it only benefits really small owner-occupiers. We'll be hit by it. This is a disaster for the entire agricultural sector. The landlord class are going to be hit badly by this. Owner-occupiers are going to be hit badly by this. Small owner-occupiers like us are going to be hit badly by this. And tenant farmers, who don't even own their own land, are going to be hit badly by this. As you know, I hate the aristocracy as much as the next man, but this reform is so profoundly misguided and ham-fisted. I think we need reforms to land tenure in this country to allow new entrants into the industry and make the rural way of life accessible, but screwing over existing owner-occupiers like us and taxing landlords in such a way that it means their tenants live in a state of chronic insecurity is not the way. The Labour Party need to think much harder about the implications of this policy. Lloyd George's death duties and the Labour Party's own settlement after the war targeted the landlord class in a way that empowered those beneath them. Aristocratic estates were broken up and in many cases were sold to the tenants, who became owner-occupiers, freed from their feudal bond. But when these taxes force us to sell off some of our fields, the opposite will happen. The land will not be bought by some bright-eyed new entrant into the industry, because it would be impossible to meet the value of land by farming it. The fields would probably be bought by some rich person who was buying £1 million worth of land so they could pass their wealth to their children while avoiding inheritance tax through agricultural property relief. But those fields neighbour our land. We know them, and they're right there. Nobody could farm them more efficiently than us. Perhaps the land would be given over to solar panels, but I think in most instances, the easiest and most logical thing to do would be for the new owner of these fields to just let them back to the farmer that sold them. People who buy land as an investment don't have the machinery or the knowledge or often the will to farm it. Other people have to do that. People will start to slip from being owner-occupiers back to being tenants. Their businesses will be less secure. And increasingly, as was the case before the war, the people who work the land will not have a stake in it. They will work on assets that they don't own, and somebody else will receive rent. Personally, I think this whole approach is pretty dumb. I get that they're trying to raise revenue, but this is an enormous change to how land tenure works in this country. When Lloyd George did that, the fallout went on for decades and arguably is still ongoing. I don't know what the effects of these taxes will be on the food supply, and I have an idea the Labour Party doesn't know either. Their selling point was that under a Labour government, the adults would be back in the room, but this is not what controlled management of the food system looks like. As it stands, this tax is attacking actual working farmers. Our land is not being used as a store of wealth, as a financial asset. The land is our business. People have previously criticised me for hoping that the Labour Party would stay true to their roots. But it's becoming clear that if I want to cling on to the post-war vision of modernity, a society where normal people like my family can have a stake in the land and produce high-quality, nutritious, cheap food for our fellow working-class citizens in the cities, I am going to have to fight the Labour Party to do that. I have spoken to people from the Labour Party about this, and their response was essentially that tough decisions had to be made and the Labour Party is doing lots to help farmers. But they've frozen the farming budget at its 2014 level, so it's not going to rise with inflation. I don't think they're on our side. I hope you understand why this is difficult for me. I am a member of the Labour Party. I am working on this channel to explain why modern agriculture exists and defend it from common misconceptions. And the answer to that question, why it exists, is because of British post-war state socialism. The cheap food policy, farming subsidies, were socialist. But when I go to the pub, I am hounded for supporting the Labour Party and I can't argue back. They say the Labour Party doesn't speak for the people. We need Nigel in so we can have his food policy, and I can't argue back. Reform UK's agricultural policies are in line with European post-war socialism, the cheap food policy. They would help farmers. It would help with food security and consumers. And although they don't say this, it could be done within a framework to reach net zero. I should be a Rottweiler for the Labour Party's position on these issues, but I can't defend them. They are attacking working people. They did it in Wales, and now they're doing it everywhere. If somebody like me, with my experience, my education and my drive, is unable to argue with the suggestion that we need Nigel Farage's agricultural policy, you are doing something wrong. The Labour Party needs to get a coherent strategy very quickly. I may recommend Christopher Adelson's 1939, A Policy for British Agriculture, as a starting point. This is the socialist vision that the Labour Party implemented after the war. Read it, understand why it says what it does, and then combine it with industry-wide emissions targets, and you have a sustainable food policy and a contented, beautiful countryside fit for the 21st century. You will see that agricultural policy is food policy and the NHS are supposed to be one and the same. Nutrition is preventative, healthcare fixes people. But now in the 21st century, the Labour Party is willfully trashing the entire agricultural sector for a little bit more revenue for healthcare. This is a complete misunderstanding of the role the government is supposed to play in the countryside and a complete misunderstanding of the role agriculture is supposed to play within society. If you are from the Labour Party, please, please read this book. I would like to leave you with a quote from British Prime Minister Benjamin Disraeli, as selected by George Stapledon, the champion of the small owner-occupying farmer, and I think the brains behind the Labour Party's socialist settlement for the countryside that was implemented after the war. He says at the start of his book discussing the role of the countryside in the modern age, "When a nation is thoroughly perplexed and dispirited, it soon ceases to make a distinction between political parties. The country is out of sorts and the government is held responsible for the disorder." This is very dangerous. I know lots of people who want what I think intellectually are socialist policies, a post-war style cheap food policy. And for that, they turn to Reform UK because the Labour Party has abandoned its position and is attacking us. Thank you for watching. I hope you enjoyed that. I found it depressing. I hope this video will age poorly because they will backtrack on this policy, which I think they will do. on balance. I may even put this video out early in anticipation of that, in case they beat me to it. Do join me next week when we talk about the Scott Report, which in 1942 recommended that the government protect small owner-occupying farmers and give normal people a meaningful stake within society. If only. I'm going to go and have a lie down for a bit, I think. I'll see you next week.